Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We will reconvene the meeting, and Senator Wieger, things quieted down, and we're ready to vote for this one. And you have an amendment. We have House Senate file 1751.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I present Senate File 1751, and to put it in the form I'd prefer, I would offer the A1 amendment as an author's amendment, which has been distributed. And basically, it deletes 1.0 to a lower number to make this more realistic budget-wise.
Senator Wieger moves to amend Senate File 1751 with the A1 amendment, and I believe everyone has one now. And he did explain it. Does anybody have it? Does anyone have any questions? Otherwise, we'll just all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment adopted. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Early childhood family education has been around since the early 70s, and it's very personal for me to be here today because my involvement with this started when I was an intern, like Mike, for the Senate Education Committee. And my assignment back in 72, 73 was to do some work for Senator Hughes on early childhood family education, chair of the committee, and he is president of the Senate. That was his passion, community ad, a number of other items. And back then, they were talking about the evidence that you are more likely to be ready for K if you involve young people in quality programs through the schools, involve their parents. So a bill was introduced. Some seed corn eventually was put in place in 1973-74, where the results was they trickled in, saying it makes an impact to provide quality programs for early learners. And in this case, 0 through 5, and heavy parent involvement, involvement with the student, involvement with staff. Some programs free, other times there would be a sliding scale. But at this point, over the years now, we have early childhood family education in every school district throughout the state. And we have, in fact, waiting lists in many areas. And it's, as many of you, I'm sure, over the interim have visited schools. For me, whether it's been in the metro or visiting up in Cook County recently, or just a week or so ago, going to Anoka Hennepin and looking at the early childhood programs and seeing what they were designed to do, to have the parent or parents, maybe it's grandparents or some other special person involved with that child in learning more about their role as a parent, quality interaction with those students. And we haven't done anything to add additional funds for a program that has been proven successful since 2008. So there is a great deal of pent-up demand in waiting lists as well. I am a strong supporter, as you know. I was the chief author last session for the Early Learning Scholarships and proud to be a part of that effort in targeted funds going for the high-risk students. ECFE reaches that whole group of students. It's voluntary, but it reaches a lot of people. I, as a parent, each of my 5 kids, we went through those programs together. And now my kids, as I'm a grandparent, they are going through those. And they may not necessarily be in a high-risk situation, but all of us can learn in a voluntary way if we want to. And I have had talked to Senator Hughes before session, octogenarian, and I think, you know, someday you're when you reach that milestone and you're going to have some fingerprints on statutes, you're going to wonder, well, you know, what's happened over the years. And I, in talking to Senator Hughes, who put a lot of this together, he said, you know, well, why aren't we adding more, you know, to a program that has been documented in terms of its effectiveness? you know, starting early, you know, back in the early 70s. And so I said, you're right. And, you know, and that's the background for bringing it here today. ECFE is a proven program that prepares students for K. It's one of many strategies that we need to look at. Our mission as a committee overall is that students be ready for college, career, with a number of milestones on that journey. Being ready for K, I believe in our discussion, is highest return on investment. And so in that spirit, I offer the proposal, which would increase revenue for early childhood family education, which goes throughout the state. And I have testifiers, could have many, but I'm going to have two testifiers talk about the importance of it, and then we can refer to the fiscal note. And members, you know, we'll see, you know, tomorrow with the forecast, and see what potential might be available in supplemental revenue. But as we continue on this journey, we're ready for K and ultimately ready for college career. Whatever we can do to invest in proven programs at that early level especially is of highest priority to me personally.
So. Thank you, Senator Wiegert. And I have to add that much like the scholarship bill, that ECFE is touching the family also. The parents are involved very heavily with ECFE, and it's a way to impact families here too. So I think this is it's great to have our chair carrying this bill.
Well, thank you. Madam Chair, I have two testifiers. First, Don Sisson, who's the Early Childhood Services Supervisor for St. Paul Public Schools, and I believe there's a couple of handouts. He'll be followed by Amy Strunk from Montevideo, and I believe we have a presentation of the slides here as well.
Sure. Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Donald Sisson. I supervise the Early Childhood Family Education Program, ECFE, for St. Paul Schools. And as Senator noted, it is an old program, has legs. We have been around for 40 years this year. So, in fact, we're celebrating a momentous birthday, which is pretty amazing. So thank the legislature for funding the only inclusive individual parent education that is really focused on parent education program in the country. And it is throughout the state in every school district. So I'm here to support the bill and talk a little bit about what we're doing currently in St. Paul. In St. Paul, our ECFE program has 11 different locations. 8 are in school district buildings and 3 in public housing communities. We also last year served 5,766 adults and 6,032 children. ECFE is specific to parents with children birth to kindergarten entrance. 56 of our families in St. Paul earn less than $30,000 annual income, and 46% spoke a language other than English at home. 10% of our children had identified special needs, and another important piece to ECFE is this is many times the first point where developmental delays may be noticed in children, so then we work closely with our Early Childhood Special Ed Services program in St. Paul and Help Me Grow in Ramsey County. 63% of the children were under 3 years of age, and we've seen that grow as the pre-kindergarten or four-year-old programming in St. Paul has expanded. In St. Paul, we offer 9 family literacy programs, and these are programs that meet 3 days a week. We are collaborate with our ABE program in providing ELL instruction for non-speaking learners, non-English speaking learners, and then one day is parent education. So there is a focus on that. We provide transportation for these classes and the early childhood component. So we wrap around integrated curriculum that is working with the family in a more holistic way. And for many families who can't afford childcare or who moms and specifically who can't get out of the house, it provides them an opportunity to network with other mothers as well. We also have weekly classes, birth to kindergarten classes, number 46, age-specific, 13, and then culturally specific, which are taught in home languages or are specific to a cultural group like African-American, American Indian, LGBT. We also have a parenting across cultures class that we developed, which helped alleviate the waiting list that we have for Family Lit because it is such in high demand. So families can come for the Parenting Across Cultures class. And that is really developed into parents networking and also talking about their parenting styles and what they did in their home countries for parenting. This year we're also offered for the first time a baby fundamentals class at six different locations for parents with newborns birth to 6 months. We realized that for a parent with a newborn to sign up for a semester of classes was a bit much in terms of their stressful lives. And so this is a drop-by where parents can come and meet with a qualified parent educator who can answer questions and support that parent in their new role is in parenting. We also have a parent education for adolescent parents, which is embedded in two of our St. Paul high schools. We have a parent educator at our hub center, which is our ELL and GED center for St. Paul. And he actually goes into ELL classes and GED classes because many of the adult learners are parents and they get some parent education embedded into what they are learning at that time. We have ECFE classes at the Family Service Center, which is the homeless transitional housing for families experiencing homelessness, and a parent educator at the Family Place. We also have parent education that we're providing for Head Start on a monthly basis, and we're also involved in a Minnesota Fathers Project who is trying to work on a project to reach disenfranchised fathers and reconnect them with their families. In St. Paul, we do home visiting. We have five culturally specific family connection workers. This is a heavily subsidized program. The money that we get from the legislation is very small for home visiting. So we think it's important enough to add additional dollars to this. We have an African-American, Hmong-speaking, Karen-speaking, Somali, and Spanish-speaking connection workers. And last year, they did 946 home visits. We use an evidence-based home visiting curriculum, parents as teachers, and basically we're connecting families to services, not only ECFE, but also services that they might be able to get out in the community, connecting them to Head Start, community child care centers, and trying to meet the family with where their needs are. It's a way for us to provide some support services to families who are on the wait list currently. And we're also working closely with the initiatives in the Promise neighborhood and trying to provide support for family, friend, and neighbor providers in the Promise neighborhood. Our revenue has looked like this pretty much for the last 5 or 6 years, so we really have not been able to increase programming at all. As you can see, the referendum is almost a third of our total budget, so we're really lucky in St. Paul that the citizens really value the school district and have passed the referendum last year, and 10% of that referendum goes into early childhood programming. It's also nice to have a district who has identified for many years that early childhood is a way and a method to close the achievement gap in the racial disparities that exist. Without that referendum money, we probably would not be able to provide the extent of services that we are currently. Our expenses, 95% of our budget is going into salaries, so it's all going into direct services. The 5% in purchase services is primarily for transportation, which is the second item out of staffing that we spend our most money on in order to get access for our families. Again, with revenues, back to the revenue piece, the money that we collect from the sliding fee scale in St. Paul is less than 5%. We never turn anybody away for our inability to pay, and our revenues collected are not a very high mark. Over the years, our demographics have changed in terms of the classes and who we're serving in St. Paul. So in this five-year period, you can see from the bar graph that the families that we're serving, white families, have significantly declined, and we have made a concerted effort to outreach to our Black and African-American communities, Hispanic, Latino, Asian, and other cultures as well. Our parents' length of participation is running about 60%, less than 2 years. Most of this is because we do prioritize new families. Because of the limited amount of classes and services we can provide to families, because of the budget, we want to get as many families, new families, getting services as possible. So that's one of the reasons why that number is high. The other thing is St. Paul is also a very mobile city, so people are moving in and out. And we have a way now of, through the Department of Ed, tracking the students who are entering ECFE through identifying them with MARS numbers. And as they move from district to district, then they'll be better identified, and we will have more accountability down the road. In 2012, in the spring of 2012, we did a reflective study through the U of M, which was sponsored in part by MNAFI, the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Educators, as well as the MCEA, Minnesota Community Education Association. And 94% of our St. Paul ECFE parents said that being a part of the ECFE program has helped them improve their parenting skills. Parents say, you know, I come for 2 hours, and what I take, the skills that I gain in that 2 hours is something I can replicate not only the rest of the week, but through the course of the child's early development, as well as a lifetime as a parent, which is a role that never gets lost. Also, parents report a greater change in parenting due to participation, and this is based on non-white and white participants. So you can see the pre-post bar graph for non-white and white, and then the parenting now, which would have been the spring of 2012, and the degree of change, and then the parents' perception of their child's development and how that changed and the degree of change. So it is a significant study that was done, and more districts came on board last year. So I think that there is some information that will be circulated to the committee about that study. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sisson.
Thank you.
I have one question,
sure.
And I suspect some of the people here at the table might not know what the Karen group of people. Can you explain that group?
The Karen is a Karen is a group of folks who it's an ethnic group that are coming out of Myanmar, which formerly was Burma, and they're political refugees that came through camps in Thailand. So they were living in the jungles in Burma, and when the regime in Myanmar came to be, they were forced out and went to political or refugee camps in Thailand. And then they started emigrating to St. Paul about 5 years ago. We had a grant with Parents as Teachers, which was part of the then MELF initiative, and to look at creative programming. And so at that point, they were starting to come into St. Paul. And we were able to train a couple of family connection workers through the Parents as Teachers model and really supported the community. So now, actually, most of Deb Moses from CAPRW testified earlier. Four of our nine family literacy classes are mostly Karen families, and we have now are offering three Karen speaking classes, weekly classes for those families as well. So we're trying to support them as much as possible.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, Mr. Sisson. I'm a strong believer in the home visiting, particularly early literacy intervention home visiting, and so I've sponsored various bills to support initiatives that are happening in my community around that. What do you think is the projected unmet need for that type of program in St. Paul, and are you satisfied, if you look at your whole budget, with the amount of resources you devote to that initiative in terms of what the research shows and the outcomes based on spending it there versus some of your other ECFE programming?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the home visiting program in St. Paul, we have highly trained educational assistance support staff who are facilitating that work because we wanted to really provide culturally specific work in the field. It feels to me like, well, first off, your question about the budget, is it sufficient? Absolutely not. The budget that we get in St. Paul, which is based on an eligible child, and I think it's $1.60 per eligible child right now in statute, which doesn't even cover one staff person. So we are subsidizing that in a big way. And the reason we're doing that is because it is an unmet need. We're finding lots of our families who need additional support, families who may be coming to the program, but due to bed rest or illness, have a lapse in continued programming. So it provides a continued connection with the program. It feels to me like most of the dollars that come into home visiting, especially in Ramsey County, end up going into nursing, the nursing field and public nursing. But I think there is a definite need for education as part of that, and somehow there needs to be a balance.
Madam Chair,
Senator
Mr. Sisson, that is my experience, and even though there's been more of a focus at the federal level around home visiting, it remains to be funneled towards the nursing side. And I think that we ought to find a way at the state level to shift our focus so that, you know, not in place of nurses, but certainly the literacy piece really should be addressed. And so thank you for bringing that forward as part of your overall program.
And, thank you for
members,
the question.
Think of the impact if we didn't have an intervention early, and those children would come to school at age 5 and not speak English, likely. And so I think it's a very important component. And members, Mr. Wilms will tell you about the $1.60, and you were accurate about that.
Madam Chair and committee members, that's correct. It is $1.60 per the number of people below 5 years of age or residing in the school district. And according to my tracking, it's approximately $570,000 each year statewide in levy.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other Senator Wieger, did you wish to have the testimony or open to more questions?
If I could yield to my next testifier, Ms. Strunk.
Okay. And you are Amy Strunk.
Amy Strunk, yes. Thank you. It's my honor to be here today. This is the first time I've been visited the Capitol here. I did live in East St. Paul, where I was a participant of the ECFE programming with my son, who is here today, hiding probably, an eighth grader.
Okay. Witnesses.
He asked me not to do that, but I.
I can relate to that. Yeah. I have grandkids about that age, and they don't like me hugging and kissing them anymore.
But I guess I didn't even learn until 4 years ago that I was part of that at-risk population. I was a young mother, 22 years old, had Henry, finishing my schooling at St. Kate's, and going into the early childhood education program. Because of that, I was aware that ECFE even was here, and it's something that did run on a sliding scale fee and something that I could sign up for. I signed up on a waiting list, waited. I knew I needed that support. I didn't have support here in the metro area. All my family is from northern Minnesota. So I felt that I learned as a parent participant that I had all the support of the community, which was important at that time when I'm waitressing, going to school, and just have a little two-year-old at home. When I graduated, I moved out to Montevideo, Minnesota, 120 miles straight west on 212. And I'm currently a halftime school readiness coordinator, ECFE coordinator, and I also teach hourly for the ECFE program. Things look the same on some levels, but they also look very different in rural Minnesota. Our programming that we're running is similar. We coordinate, I feel like, a lot with our public health. We coordinate with our county, with child protection. We run programs out of a brochure through our community ed program, and people sign up, but that's only a very small portion of what our budget is used for as well. We participate monthly in WIC clinics. We run a program called The Incredible Years, where we provide meals, busing, and child care for a group of targeted children that are identified through public health, through our child protection team in our county. So we're really sitting together at a table and doing a lot of collaborating with our dollars, and that's how we can do the outreach that's needed in our community. ECFE alone can't. So we're working together. I also apply for grants every year. We have, MOFAS, Mothers of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. We're doing a community-wide baby shower. They're coming in. They're helping support that. I personally go to the prenatal classes that are at our county hospital. We are a key participant in all early childhood screenings. I do all the follow-up of all the families that are flagged at early childhood screening. For those of you that were here for the previous bill that was presented, and they talked about the infrastructure and how are we going to make this work, I'm the infrastructure in our town. We have our school district population is 7,500 people. So graduating class sizes are about 100 students. So we're presenting the Pathways 2 and the Pathways 1 applications to these families as we're visiting with them throughout the parent education and they're coming in. I feel that our mission is to be that warm and friendly face of our school district. And my job is to make every family feel welcome and have their very first experience positive. They want to roll right into our three-year-old school readiness programming where their parents aren't there, and that separation anxiety has already been worked through in our classes. And they are loving school, and it's I'm honored to hear that these children go to their child checkups and talk to the physicians and talk about Miss Amy and how they love Miss Amy and how they can go then into Miss Peggy's class and jump right into her arms And it's just a smooth transition all the way through. And I'm, again, wearing so many hats that many times I recognize some faces here through the Minnesota PTSA Association, PTA. Our district's ECFE program, our parent educators, myself, we started the PTSA back again in our school, and we are the foundation for that as well. So it's not, it's parent education from birth all the way through the school system, especially in a, like again in a rural community when everybody knows everybody. And, I'm the person that they can come to when they don't want to come to the administrator, when they have questions, what programming is right for me. I've met them, met these families when they're very young and they go on up. The other big difference is, again, when my sons were young, living here in St. Paul, we had the YMCA at our disposal. We had the Como Zoo that we could go to. We had the conservatories. We had the zero-depth pools and the aquatic parks. We had children's theaters. We had really a huge variety of opportunities that we could use to grow our children's brains and give them these experiences out of our homes. Earlier we talked about research showing that, you know, 90% of a children's brain is developed by the time that they're five. Most of these synapses or, you know, connecting wires are happening really from infancy to three. So what I hear that, you know, St. Paul is really honing in with 60% of their programming from birth to three. Those are the important years, and I very much support all of the money that's going to the school readiness. We can't forget about and we can't undermine the importance of this birth to three age group as we're moving forward. Everything is just tearing up. So I think I covered all my main points here. Going back to the zoos and all the experiences they have here in the metro area. In Montevideo, we don't have any of that. We might not have the racial diversity. We have 14% of our early childhood participants that came through speaking Spanish. But I think our socioeconomic diversity is just as vast. And we're honing in and we're really trying to target at-risk families that statistically and, you know, need, the data has proven, you know, really need that support. It's just as important to me to not forget about the affluent farmers and the doctors and because of proximity don't have those resources. They still aren't getting out of the house. They don't have the social networks that maybe they had at one time. So without our classrooms providing the developmentally appropriate experiences for them, the sensory experiences, I've had a surgeon's wife say, "Oh, I didn't know that my child really should even have scissors before they're four. You know, it's just a scary thing. It's not safe." And so we're providing the platform for them to let them know that's not the case. We need to be working on fine motor skills at age two, and here's how we can do it safely. All the way around, I think that ECFE is an unbelievable program that has affected my life personally, and I love to go and share the message, you know, whenever I can. Thank you.
Ms. Strunk, I have a question. How do you, mm-hmm. you have a, how big is the territory you serve, you know, like miles? You have a lot of rural, I imagine.
We don't, I've lived in Montevideo for 4 years. There are, actually, I grew up in Park Rapids, Minnesota. That's a big school district as far as miles goes. Montevideo, we have a lot of school districts that are just right down the chain. Okay. So the school district population is about 7,500 people. We're right next to Granite Falls. Wilmer is down the road. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure miles-wise. Okay. Yeah.
And my question really is, how do you find out about the people, the families that are in need, particularly in need of your services, and how do you reach them? And do you find many that refuse your invitation?
Yes. We find out by We have access, you know, to our census through our school district. So we pull that. We've done some just for general mailings. We use our district interpreter to help with Spanish. We sit around the table with public health. I'm on many boards. One of them is the out-of-home placement task force throughout our county. And we will discuss families, and we all have confidentiality, and we'll talk about families that have moved in to the district, and then the support that perhaps public health and nursing and the follow-along program is using. And then we will, through WIC visits, is a big one, target families. And kind of the if everybody's preaching the same message and wrapping your arms around the same families, and then trying to take every barrier away, transportation, providing meals, and then providing child care is a way that we could pull them in.
Thank you. Senator Wiegar, how would you?
Madam Chair, this has been rolled out successfully throughout Minnesota, and it's time to increase our investment.
Are there any questions from the committee members? I'll just take a moment to share that I visited two Montessori schools because I am going to be carrying some legislation for them. But when I went to visit the one, and their school offers from 8 weeks to the school that I visited to, I think it was six, and 8 weeks. And I said, oh, is that your daycare program? And she was very quick to correct me and say, no, that's our school for eight-week-old babies.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, and it's all the ages from 8 weeks. They don't take them before 8 weeks is what they're saying. But definitely it's a school, and it's amazing to see that. It's something that, of course, is quite expensive, or it's subsidized heavily. But it's great. So... question? Senator Wicklund.
Chair Johnson, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say I really strongly support providing an increase. I really think that these programs are so important. In my community, I think the fact that we can connect parents to not only to parental knowledge, but then the English language courses to be able to gain that knowledge while their kids are in good, you know, good care.
Early years.
And then... connecting them with their schools early so that they become more familiar with how schools work. And I just think that's really important. I'd also like to acknowledge that, you know, these constraints that we've had on the funding over these years, it really puts a constraint on salaries as well. And I think we need to look at, you know, how do we better support our early childhood teachers as well. So.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Mm-hmm. Mr. Arneson has some... Arneson. Has some information that he'd like to share with you.
Madam Chair and members, just so that there's no confusion, it's probably clear to everyone reading the documents, but the numbers in front of you are accurate after the A1 amendment was adopted. And so in a nutshell, it's an increase in revenue for districts of about 55% in all districts. It's an increase in revenue statewide, roughly $24.5 million. And because ECFE is funded both by statewide levy and with state aid, there's some aid levy shifts that occur anytime you raise or lower statewide revenues, and those are reflected in the second and third columns of the tabular data on the run in front of you.
Does everyone have a copy of this? Okay. Senator Bono.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to keep bringing this up every time we talk about formulas that are tied to the basic formula, because I believe over time it's become a disservice to our state that the way, you know, anytime a dollar comes in, it's not really a dollar is a dollar is a dollar, because once it goes through the formula, that dollar becomes one thing in one district and another thing in another district. And while I believe there should be a timeout, and I'm not advocating to change the formula the way it is, the basic formula, I would suggest that we consider for future that we let the dollars be equal across all districts so that we don't have that the impact of going through the various different things with regard to the whole formula. If I, you know, I think in a perfect world, I'd like to see us from now on have all new money go a dollar is a dollar is a dollar is a dollar. Thank you.
Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and Senator Boff, in this case, that actually is true. With the proposed bill language.
Yeah, that'll do that.
If if the formula allowance were increased, say, by 2% in any given year, the ECFU revenue for every eligible district, and we've heard in the testimony that every district, in fact, does have ECFU programs, every district's ECFU revenue, regardless of other characteristics of that district, would increase by 2%.
Senator Bono.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Arneson, by 2%, though, 2% of the basic formula, and that basic formula is different amount for each district.
No, Madam Chair, and Senator Boff, the basic formula is the same for each district. The basic formula, in many ways, in other parts of general education, is sort of the beginning point for other general education programs. So there's no intermediate calculation in this okay. bill between the basic formula and ECFU revenue. There are, as you know, other instances in general education that the basic formula, even as the starting as this identical starting point, results in different levels of revenue for districts based on, you know, changes in the formula allowance. But that's not true in this case.
Madam Chair, Mr. Arneson, and I stand corrected. Thank you. That's great.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 1751 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Motion adopted. Yes, thank you. And that ends the meeting. Is that right?
Madam Chair, members will be meeting tomorrow. There's five bills, I believe, that are posted, and we are preparing for hearings next week. If you have something that you want heard, please get a hold of me very soon.
Okay. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.